Sunday dinner. It's epic around here. And you'd have a chance to flirt some with Chase. Tempting. Believe me, but I need a nap, Jessica insisted, and I think I shouldn't push the flirting too hard right this minute. Strategic game. Approving. Bodine tapped a fingertip on Jessica's shoulder. Next move's Chase's. You could say that. Well, thanks for the ride. Anytime. Say hi to everybody. I will. Since Jessica had pulled up to the front of the house, Bodine went in the same way. She'd just run upstairs, she thought, change her dress, then see what help her mother might need for dinner. She stepped in, stopping short, as she saw her mother crying in her father's arms. Not just crying, Bodine thought in a flash of an instant, but shaking with it. What happened? A fist squeezed around her heart so hard she went lightheaded. The grannies? Sam shook his head, stroking Maureen's hair as he met Bodine's eyes over his wife's head.
Everyone's all right.
I'm all right. I'm all right. Swiping at her face, Maureen pulled back. Did I turn everything off? I need to check if...
Everything's off, Sam assured her. We need to go now, Renee.
Go where? What's happening? Bodine demanded. Alice! When her voice cracked, Maureen took a deep breath, let it come out slow. They found Alice. She's in the hospital, in Hamilton. They... Alice? But where?
Not now, honey.
Sam kept his arm firm around Maureen's shoulders.
We've got to go get your grannies. We can't let Cora drive with the state she's in.
I left everything in the kitchen, Maureen began. I'll take care of it, Mom. Chase, Rory, I was going to leave a note. I forgot. I'll tell them. I'll tell them. Bodine moved in, hugged Maureen hard, felt the tremors. We'll be right behind you. We'll be there. She framed her mother's face with her hands. Take care of the grannies. It was, she saw, exactly the right thing to say. Her mother's eyes cleared. We will. We'll take care. Chase and Rory. I'll find them. Go, now. The minute her mother was out the door, Bodine dashed toward the back of the house, dragging out her phone. She didn't stop when she hit the kitchen with its scents of Sunday roast and fresh bread, but punched Chase's number as she streaked outside again. Where are you? She demanded the second he answered.
Checking some fences. We're riding in now. We're not late.
You need to get home right now. Right now, Chase. They found Alice. Mom's sister, Alice. Is Rory with you?
Right here. We're coming.
Relieved, she ran back in, up the back stairs. She tore off her dress, grabbed jeans and a shirt. Her mind flashed back to her mother, crying and shaking. Her mother didn't have her purse, Bodine realized, and, half-dressed, dashed into her parents' room to grab it. She tried to think of what else her mother might need, thought of the state of the kitchen and the meal. She dragged on the rest of her clothes, called Clementine, then ran down to meet her brothers. Chapter 17. It felt like a dream. Nothing seemed quite real. Maureen sat close beside her, gripping her hand, and that was real. That was real. So was her mother, holding her other hand. Cora wondered if they kept her from floating away. She heard the doctor, but the words he spoke just kept circling in her head, couldn't seem to take root. Grandchildren came in. Did she smile at them? They always made her smile, just by being. Bob Tate was there, standing by. Bob had called her, told her. Alice. I'm sorry. She struggled through the fog, tried to concentrate on the doctor's words. I can't seem to make my mind work. You're saying she doesn't remember who she is?
She's experienced considerable trauma, Mrs. Bodine. Long-term trauma. Physical, mental, emotional.
Long-term? Cora repeated, blankly.
She'd do better with straight talk.
Tate stepped forward, crouched down so his eyes and Cora's were on level.
It's looking like somebody held Alice against her will. Likely for years. He hurt her, Cora. She's got scars from him hurting her. Scars on her back, from beatings, on her ankle, from what I'm going to say looks like a shackle. She was raped, and not long before she was found. She's had children, honey.
The shudder, like sharp fingers clawing, ripped right through her. Children.
The doctor said she's given birth more than once.
Yes. Straight talk, she thought. Better. Horrible. Someone took her and chained her up and beat her. Raped her. My Alice.
Some of the scars are old, and some aren't so old. He hurt her mind, too. They've got a doctor here who's going to help her with that, just like Dr. Grove's going to help her.
Years. She'd lived years and knew how they flew, even when some patches of them crawled like snails. But years? Her Alice? Her child? Her baby? Held and hurt for years? Who did it? She demanded. The fog burned to cinders by rage. Who did this to her?
I don't know yet.
Before she could speak again, his hands tightened his grip on hers.
But I can and do promise you, on my life, Cora, I'll do everything there is to find out. To find him. To make him pay for it. I swear that to you.
Rage could wait, Cora told herself. The weeping and wailing already churning inside her could wait. Because I need to see my girl.
Mrs. Bodine,
Dr. Grove moved in again.
You need to understand she might not recognize you. You need to prepare yourself for that. You need to prepare yourself for her appearance and emotional state.
I'm her mother.
Yes, but she may not know who you are. You need to be very calm when you go into her. Your instincts will be to hold her, to ask questions, to expect a response. She may become agitated. If so, you'll need to leave her alone. Give it more time. Can you do that?
I can and will do whatever's best for her, but I need to see her with my own eyes.
She doesn't look the same, Tate told her. You prepare for that, Cora. She doesn't look or sound like you remember her.
I'm going with you. Maureen got to her feet. I'll stay outside the room, but you're not going by yourself. Cora gave her own mother's hand a squeeze, then rose and took her daughter's. I'll do better, knowing you're there with me.
I'll take you in. Mrs. Bodine, Grove continued as he led the way, you need to resist asking her questions about what happened to her, reacting to the signs you'll see of what's happened to her. Stay calm. She may not want to be touched. She may not want to talk. Use her name. She's calling herself Esther.
Esther?
Yes, but the sheriff continued to call her Alice, and she calmed when he talked to her.
Did she know him?
I don't believe so. At least, not on a conscious level, but he was able to connect.
Grove paused outside the door.
Sheriff Tate says you're a strong woman.
He'd be right. With a nod, Grove opened the door. In her mind, Alice had stayed the pretty, wild-natured young girl who'd run off to be a movie star. That pretty young girl and all the stages of that girl before that day. The little girl in frilly dresses and cowboy boots, the fretful baby she'd rocked late at night, the defiant teenager, the child who'd crawled into bed with her seeking comfort from a bad dream. The woman in the bed with the bruised face, the dull and graying hair, the hard lines dug in around her mouth and eyes, bore little resemblance to those precious images. Still, Cora thought, she recognized her daughter. Her heart twisted in her chest, a rag wrung hard, and her legs went weak under her. Then Maureen tightened her grip on her hand. "I'm right here, Ma. I'll be right here. Right outside." Cora straightened her backbone, walked toward the bed. The woman in the bed cringed back. Her eyes, green as her father's had been, darted around the room with terror chasing behind them. Some nightmares couldn't be soothed away with cuddles. "It's all right now, Alice. Nobody's going to hurt you. I won't let anyone hurt you again." "Where's the man? Where's the..." "Bob Tate? He's right outside. He called me to tell me you were here. I'm so happy to see you again, Alice. My Alice." "Esther." Alice hunched in on herself. "I don't want any more shots. Sir will be very angry. I can't stay here." "I had a teacher named Esther," Cora made up on the spot. "Esther Tanner. She was so nice. But I named you Alice for your daddy's ma. Alice Ann Bodine. My frisky alley cat." Was it her own blind hope? Her own desperate need? Or did she see something flicker in those frightened eyes? Carefully, so carefully her bones hurt, she eased onto the side of the bed. "I used to call you that when you were just a baby, fighting sleep. Oh, you'd fight sleep like it was your fiercest enemy. My Alice never wanted to miss a minute of life." "No, Alice was a whore and a trollop. God punished her for wickedness." Her heart twisted again, this time with that churning rage, but Cora dammed it up for later. "Alice is, and was, and always will be, high-spirited, stubborn, but never wicked. Oh, you could drive me to distraction and back again, my alley cat, but couldn't you make me laugh, too, and make me proud? Like that time you stood up for little Emma Winthrop when the other girls were making fun of her for having a stutter. You pushed a couple of them right on their asses, got in trouble for it, and made me proud." Alice shook her head, and Cora took a chance. Gently, so gently, she laid her hands on Alice's cheeks. "I love you, Alice. Your ma always loves you." When Alice shook her head again, Cora only smiled, lowered her hands to her lap. "You know who else is here, whenever you want to see them. Renee and Grammy. We're all so happy you're home." Eyes darting again, Alice rubbed her lips together. "Sir provides. I have to go back. I have a house Sir built for me. I keep it clean. I have to clean the house. I just love to see your house." Cora kept her smile easy and thought dark, bitter, vengeful thoughts. "Where is it?" "I don't know. I don't know." Now the darting eyes flew back to Cora's. They held such fear, such confusion. "I got lost. I was wicked and fell into temptation." "We're not going to worry about that. Not a bit. You look tired now, so I'm going to let you rest. I'm just going to leave something with you. One of my favorite things." Rising, Cora reached in her pocket. She'd taken the wallet snapshot out of her purse on the drive-in. Gently again, She took Alice's hand, pressed the photo into it. In it, Cora stood flanked by her two teenage daughters, their cheeks pressed to hers as they smiled for the camera. "Your grandpa took that on Christmas morning when you were 16. You hold on to that. If you get afraid, you look at that. Now you rest, my Alice. I love you." She got as far as the door and Maureen before the tears started. "It's all right, Ma. You did everything right."
"She looks so sick. I'm scared. Her hair. Oh, Renee, her pretty hair."
"We're going to take care of her now. We're all going to take care of her. Come on now. Come on and sit back down. Chase," Maureen said as soon as they reached the waiting area, "go get your Nana some tea, and for Grammy, too. Sit down, Ma." Miss Fancy wrapped her arms around Cora, rocked, soothed. "Dr. Grove," Maureen said, "I'd like to speak with you a moment." She walked out, scanned the area for something approaching a private spot. "First," she began, "you said someone would be evaluating her mental and emotional state. I'm assuming you mean a psychiatrist."
"That's correct."
"I'll need the name and the qualifications of that doctor. Understand me," she continued before he could speak, "my mother is, as advertised, a strong woman, but she needs an advocate, and my sister certainly does. That will be me. I need to know everything there is to know about her condition, every part of her condition, and her treatments." She drew out her phone. "I'm going to record this, if you don't mind, so there's no chance I'll misunderstand or mix something up later. Before I do that, I want to thank you for the care you've given my sister so far, and the compassion you showed my mother."
"I'll be as thorough as I can. I think it would benefit my patient if you and I and Dr. Minow had a conversation before she evaluates Alice."
"Is that Celia Minow?"
"Yes." "Do you know her?"
"I do. So we can skip going into her qualifications. I can meet with both of you whenever you can set it up. Now," she turned on her phone recorder, "let's start with Alice's physical condition." Odine took a page out of her mother's book. She waited until Tate stepped out to make a call, slipped out behind him. "I have questions."
"I understand that, Bodine, but..."
She simply took his arm, steered him past the nurse's station. "You said she'd been raped before she was brought here. You did a rape kit?"
"That's right."
"Is there DNA? His DNA? I've watched my share of CSI shows."
"And you should know it doesn't work just as it does on TV. It's going to take time to get results from the kit. And if there's DNA, we'll need a suspect to match it up against."
"She could identify this man." In a gesture as weary as he looked, Tate scrubbed at the back of his neck.
"She can't identify herself right now."
"I understand that. And I understand most of my family is focusing on Alice. How she is, more than how she got there. So I'm going to start with how she got there. Where was she, exactly? Who found her?"
"A couple driving home from a night out found her on the side of Route 12. We can't say where she'd come from, how far she'd walked before she just collapsed there. She was wearing a house dress, house slippers. She didn't have any identification. She didn't have a damn thing."
"How far could she walk dressed like that?" She paced away, paced back. "A few miles, maybe."
"In any direction," Tate pointed out. "We sent her clothes off to State. Their forensic people will go over them, look for something that might tell us more. But that's not going to be quick as a whistle either, Bodine, as all of this takes time. You need to trust me on this. There's not a stone I won't turn over to find who did this to her."
"I'm not doubting that. Not one bit. I just need a sense.
I need to have something I can work through my own head. The idea she might have been snatched up and held since she left home, I don't think that's the case. The truck she took back then was found in Nevada. She sent postcards from California.
That's right. That's right. Nobody much talked about Alice, but I knew that. She must have been back around here. She must have been taken around here, Sheriff. She couldn't have traveled from California or Nevada in a house dress and slippers. So that gave her a sense, at least. All right, she nodded decisively. That's something to think about. She turned back to him. You said she'd had children. Where are her children? God, they'd be cousins to me. As it struck home, she pressed her fingers to her eyes. She's my aunt. I never thought about her that way. Bodine looked back down the hallway. I hardly ever thought of her at all. She would now, Bodine told herself. Bodine convinced her mother to go home with her, and Rory used Grammy as the lever. Grammy couldn't stay sitting in a hospital waiting room all night. Grammy should come stay at the ranch, and needed a little tending. Cora wouldn't budge, so Sam and Chase stayed with her. They'd take shifts. Since no one had eaten at the hospital, Bodine warmed up the meal the loyal Clementine had finished cooking and stored away. When two of the women she loved poked at the food on their plates, Bodine put her foot down. Looks like Rory's the only one who'll get a shot of whiskey after this late dinner. I happen to think we could all use one, but I'm damned if you're putting that whiskey on empty stomachs. That's an incentive, Miss Fancy managed a half-smile, ate a bite of beef. I've held such anger in my heart for that girl. So have I, Maureen agreed. Anger, resentment, and all the hard words I'd say to her if I ever got the chance. Oh, stop it. Both of you. More than a little shocked, Rory sat up straight. Just hold on, Bodine. The hell I will. The anger and resentment and hard words came from what she did. She took off. And this doesn't change that careless act. The anger and all the rest was because you were thinking of Nana. You were thinking of your daughter's hurt and your mother's. Alice did what she did and deserved a good kick in the ass for it.
Jesus, Bodine, Rory began,
but Bodine shut him down with one scorching look. But that careless act doesn't mean she deserved what happened to her. Nobody deserves that, and nobody at this table is responsible for what did happen. So stop it, and eat. I don't care for that tone, Maureen said stiffly. I don't care for sitting here while my mother takes on guilt that isn't hers to take, and taking it tosses a share on my Grammy. I don't care for my Grammy doing the self-same thing to my mother.
I don't like the tone either.
Miss Fancy ate another bite.
Just like I don't much like that the girl has a point.
One that could be made more respectfully, but Maureen picked up her fork again.
If she's getting away with it,
Rory glanced around the table.
Feeling bad about how you felt doesn't do a thing to help Nana. What's going to help is the family standing together, doing what needs to be done. Together. Guilt's not a uniter, and we're going to be united on this.
He added a smirk for his sister.
That's how you make the point, respectfully.
I plowed the field, she reminded him. Miss Fancy waved that away.
Every now and again the boy makes sense.
She reached over, rubbed the back of his hand.
She's going to need us, Rini. They're both going to need us.
Maureen ate carefully.
The doctor says physically she'd be able to leave the hospital in a few days, but it might take longer for her to be emotionally ready. They'll transfer her to the psychiatric unit until...
But I... What, honey?
I talked a little with Celia Minow. She's going to be treating her. She needs to evaluate and talk with Alice and decide what's best. It may be we could bring her here. She grew up here. Her family's here. We'll get a nurse if we need to. And Celia will either come out here for her sessions, or we can take Alice to her. I need to talk it over with Sam and with all of you, because it's a lot to ask, a lot to expect. Of course she'll come here. Bodine looked at Rory, got his nod. Bodine House is too small when you add in nurses and doctors. There's plenty of room here, and it's somewhere she knows.
That lightens my burden, Miss Fancy stated.
Bodine, I can't eat any more this late at night, but I think I earned one scant finger of whiskey to help me sleep. I dearly want that, and my bed.
Bodine rose, got glasses, poured one for Miss Fancy, cocked an eyebrow at her mother. Maureen held up two fingers. She poured that, the same for Rory and herself.
Well,
Maureen lifted her glass.
However hard a road it's been for her, however hard a road still to go, let's drink to Alice, to the prodigal's return.
Using Grammy again, Bodine convinced her mother to go upstairs, settle Grammy in, get some rest herself, while she and Rory dealt with the kitchen.
She can't be left alone. Alice, Rory said. Do we call her Aunt Alice? Jesus, Bo.
I think Alice will do.
We'll have to take shifts there, too, if and when she comes here. Probably hire nurses with psychiatric experience. Mom will handle that part, and having something tangible to handle is going to help her deal with the rest. It may be Nana and Grammy end up staying here for a while, too.
We've got room. I wonder how long she's been back here, back in the area.
As she wiped the counter, Bodine sent him a look of approval. We're tugging the same line on that.
You'd have to figure. I always figured she was dead.
I did too. I couldn't understand how she could be alive and not even write a letter or call now and then. Nothing, for years. Knowing now somebody held her like a prisoner and was so cruel to her, and all the time close by? Close enough, by here. Rory, we could have driven or ridden within a mile of where she's been.
Has to be isolated, don't you think?
I don't know. I just don't. Those women in, was it Ohio, where that bastard held them for years? That wasn't so isolated, and nobody knew.
I can't figure it. Can't figure why any man would want a woman he'd have to keep locked up. It makes me sick.
Filled with disgust, he tossed down his dishcloth.
I'm going to go on up. I can drive in early tomorrow, give Chase and Dad time to come home.
Mom's going to want to go with you. And maybe she can talk Nana into coming back, even just for a change of clothes. If she can, I'll bring Nana back.
We'll make it work.
He turned to her, drew her in for a hug.
No matter how many times you annoyed the sheer hell out of me, I'd have been mighty pissed if you'd ever just taken off.
I feel exactly the same.
You get some rest, too.
He kissed the top of her head. Proceeded upstairs. She knew she wouldn't settle. Not yet. She told herself she needed a walk. And even though she knew exactly where she intended to walk, she didn't admit it until she knocked on Callan's door. He answered so quickly, she knew he'd been waiting. You heard?
Clementine.
He pulled her inside.
I went over hoping to mooch Sunday dinner. Are you okay?
I don't know what I am, but that's the least of it.
It's on my list.
His hands rubbed up and down her arms as he drew her back to take a good look at her.
I didn't call or text because I didn't want to get in the way.
didn't go over when I saw the lights come on in the kitchen for the same reason.
But he'd waited for her, she thought. He'd waited.
Do you think you could just hold on to me a minute?
I can do that. Is Cora holding up?
She's still at the hospital. Won't leave yet. Callan, can we lie down? I don't mean sex. Can we just lie down so I can tell you all of it? I'm too tired to stand and don't want to sit.
He hooked an arm around her waist, led her to the bedroom.
Let's get those boots off.
She let him tug them away as she stretched out on the bed. Thanks. I've been going at it all in sections and in bits. I want to run through it all together. Maybe it'll finally make some sort of sense.
He stretched out beside her.
Go ahead.
When I got home from work, Mom was crying. She took him through it all, step by step. He interrupted rarely, simply let her tell him what she'd seen, heard, felt, as it came to her. Mom's going to bring her home to the ranch, she concluded. It may be soon. It may be months from now, but she's made up her mind on it.
That worries you?
I worry how much stress it'll add to Mom's life, but she'd have the stress anyway. I worry they won't catch the son of a bitch who did this, and it'll just hang over us like a storm ready to break. I worry that somewhere close to home, close enough to home, there's somebody who'd do this. Children, Callan. She had children. She could have one my age, or Rory's, or have young ones. Are they being held and hurt like she was? Or are they part of it? Like, I don't know, a cult?
He smoothed her hair back from her face.
That's a lot of worry.
It's like the bad shoved in. Two women dead, Alice? It's like the bad shoved in and changed the world on me. Could you hold on again? I need to shut my eyes for a minute.
Sure.
He held on, felt her fall away into sleep almost as soon as her eyes closed. He understood her worries, every one of them. But there was one she hadn't come to yet that leaped straight to the top of his pile. Alice Bodine wasn't dead. A live woman could, once her mind settled in again, identify whoever had kept her a prisoner, beaten her, raped her. He worried a man who would do those things wouldn't hesitate to kill the woman who knew his face, and anyone who stood in his way. She woke with her head pillowed on his shoulder and him still holding on. The comfort of that? She didn't know how to express her gratitude for the simple comfort of that. When she started to ease away, he held tighter.
Get some more sleep, he told her.
I didn't mean to sleep at all. I need to get back in case they need me. She sat up, shoved her hair back. He sat up with her, stroked his hand down its length. She wanted to lean into him, lean on him, just another minute, but... Is that clock right? He glanced at it, read 3:35.
Yeah.
It's a late hour to bring this up. But we may need you to shuffle some between resort and ranch until we figure all this out. At least a couple of us need to be at the hospital. We'll be taking shifts.
It's not a problem.
Not tomorrow. Or today, I should say. She located her boots, pulled them on. You're visiting with your mother.
I can put that off.
No, don't. I need to figure out some sort of schedule anyway, and your mother, she'll be counting on it. She leaned into him a moment. Thanks for being a friend when I needed one.
I'm a friend even when you don't. But next time, I'm going to want sex.
He made her laugh, as intended. Me too. She cupped his face. Kissed him.
Me too.
Keep in touch about this, Bodine.
I will. She pushed up. I'm going to head to the hospital, since I got some sleep in me. Relieve Dad and Chase, whether they want me to or not. Chase is going to need a friend, too.
I'm his friend, needed or not. But I'm not having sex with him.
Laughing again, she started out. You and Alice both left, but you sure came back different ways. Get some more sleep, Skinner. Still fully dressed, he lay back when he heard the door close. But he didn't sleep again. Chapter 18 Callan added to his already packed day by pitching in with the stable horses. Hell, he was up anyway, he thought as he mucked out a stall. He'd chosen that particular duty because he knew Chase's habits as well as he knew his own. 20 minutes after he'd begun, Chase came in. Looked tired, Callan thought, and worn around the edges.
Are you on our roll today? Chase asked him. Nope. Just killing some time. Because you love shoveling horse shit? It's my life's work.
Pausing, Callan leaned on the shovel.
What can I do? I haven't figured out what anybody can do. We're all just waiting. Not even sure for what right yet. I know one of us has to be there to catch Nana if she falls.
His Nana, too, Callan thought. And she had been as far back as his memory ran.
How's she holding up? She's got steel in the spine. I guess I always knew it, but I never saw it so true as now. She pushed to stay the night in Alice's room. I looked in a couple of times, Dad too. It looked like they were both sleeping. Then Bodine walks in about 5:30 this morning. She'd gone over to the granny's house, got Nana a change of clothes and whatever she figured was needed, and told me and Dad to go home. Wouldn't take no. Apple? Tree. Short drop. I know it. I don't know, Alice, Chase said abruptly. I don't have feelings about her, for her, except feeling sick and sorry, finding out she's been through the worst kind of hell, and likely years of it. But I don't know her. I don't have that kind of connection with her. I've got to think about the women I do know. I do have that tie with.
Running out of words for a moment, Chase rubbed his hands over his face.
Grammy's damn near 90. How am I supposed to stop her from spending hours in a hospital waiting room? Give her a distraction. Give her a task.
Chase threw up his hands. A dead giveaway of frustration in a man of economic words and gestures.
Like what?
Well, Jesus, I don't know. A grandmother thing. She's Alice's grandmother, so she's got that tie you don't,
and you sure as hell shouldn't be feeling guilty over that, son. She's my mother's sister. So the fuck what, Chase? You never met her in your life.
Clothes. It struck Callan as inspired.
What about clothes?
Bodine said Alice only had the clothes on her back, and they took those, sent them off to be analyzed. She's going to need clothes, isn't she?
I expect, but think about it. You go back in there, and over breakfast you mention how Alice doesn't have anything but those hospital gowns. I'll bet you a week's pay your ma and Miss Fancy will jump all over that like they've got springs in their feet.
Aye. They would, too. I never thought of it.
Likely they haven't yet either.
Callan pitched more soiled hay into the barrow.
They're reeling from all this, but it won't be long before they think of the practical. You think of it first. Get them going on it.
That's a damn good idea.
I solve world issues while shoveling horse shit.
Chase's smile came fast, but faded just as quickly.
Cal, there's a man somewhere. Somewhere too damn close. Who'd do what was done to Alice. Any way to solve that one? I'll work on it, as there's plenty of horse shit. Take care of your family. And remember, I can warm a seat in a waiting room. I'm going to be in Missoula this afternoon, so I can head to the hospital after I'm done there. I wouldn't mind if you did.
Callan nodded.
Then I will, he said, and went back to his mucking out.
That afternoon, after readjusting the schedule, tapping Maddie to come in for a last-minute lesson, and putting Ben in charge, Callan knocked on the bright blue door of his sister's pretty house. The windows flanking the door held chili pepper red window boxes he knew his brother-in-law had built. Pansies, with the purple and yellow faces he always thought a little too human, spilled out of them. His sister would have planted them. He knew a greenhouse stood in the backyard that, along with a clever swing set that mimicked a spaceship, they'd built together. Just as they'd built a life together, a family, their clever arts and crafts shop. The backyard also held a kiln house, so some of the pottery on the store's shelves carried his sister's mark. She'd always been clever, he thought now. Able to make something interesting out of something most would take as cast-off trash. They'd fought, as siblings do, and he preferred Chase's company and the ranch to hers and home. But he'd always had an admiration for Savannah's creativity, even her near-to-unflappable calm, though when his own blood boiled inside him, her cool attitude frustrated the shit out of him. But when Savannah opened the door, her brown hair in braids, her face as pretty as a frosted cupcake, and her belly outright huge under a checkered shirt, he felt only a warm shot of love.
"How do you get out of bed hauling that around?"
He gave the belly a gentle poke.
"Justin rigged up a pulley system."
"I wouldn't put it past him. Where's the big guy?"
"Nap time, though that precious hour is nearly up. Come in, quick, while there's some actual quiet."
She pulled him inside, bumping her belly, just a little weird, against him in a hug.
"He's got the puppy in bed with him, too. He thinks he's pulling one over on me."
She walked into the living room. A big, deep-cushioned sofa with happy red poppies on a blue background, wing chairs in red with blue stripes, all of which they'd found at flea markets and reupholstered. Like the tables they'd refinished, the lamps Savannah had saved from some junk pile, painted up and made new again. All the pieces, all around, he thought. Bits and pieces. Nothing perfect, nothing exact. And everything that made a home. She plopped down in a chair, rubbed her belly.
"Ma's getting dressed. You're early. You want coffee? I've already had my one allowed cup for the day. I just can't quit it, but I can make you some."
"Just sit."
"How about some sassafras tea, cowboy?"
He grinned.
"Not in this life, you weird-ass hippie. Weren't you at the shop?"
"I needed a day off. I had some things to finish up in the workshop, and Justin starts getting overprotective about this stage of the bake-off."
She patted her belly again.
"I could have taken Ma today, Cal. I know how you feel about it."
"It's no problem."
"I can get a sitter easy if you want me along."
"Don't worry about it, Vanna."
"She's really looking forward to it. Mostly it's spending time with you."
She looked up at the ceiling as she heard a thump, a series of yips, and boy-sized gut laughter.
"Time's up."
"I'll go get him."
Savannah waved Callan back down. "No need for that. Believe me, he knows the way.
And I made the mistake of telling him you were coming by, so brace yourself."
"I like him. He's got your what-can-I-do-with-this way and Justin's look-at-the-funny-side attitude. You made an entertaining kid."
"Working on another. Want to know which kind?"
"Which kind of what?"
"Oh, boy or girl? I thought you weren't finding out." "We weren't. We didn't with Brody, and he was the best surprise ever. So we weren't, and we didn't.
Then we were talking one night about how the nursery, which was gender neutral, evolved into boy. Did we leave it, do it neutral again, or what, now that we've got Brody in his big guy room and are about to fill the crib again? So we decided just find out. And we did.
Okay. What flavor's in there?
Strawberry ice cream.
Pink? A girl.
He stretched out his foot to give hers a nudge.
You'll have one of each. Nice work.
He watched her belly ripple.
Talk about weird.
She knows we're talking about her. Aubra or Lila? We've got it down to those two. Whoever wins gets first name, the other middle. Which one do you like?
I'm not going there. Between Ma and Pa.
I'm not saying which one's mine, which is Justin's. Just asking which strikes you.
I guess Aubra, then.
Yes!
She shook a fist in the air. Another vote for me. Now, if I talk him into Aubra Rose and saving Lila for if we have another girl...
You're already thinking of another?
The puppy, a wildly affectionate lab, streaked down the steps and straight into Callan's lap, forelegs braced on Callan's chest as he lapped Callan's face. Brody, hair in mad sleep tufts, face rosy, eyes as manic as the pup's, navigated the steps with a plastic bucket.
Cow! Cow! Cow!
Whatever else he babbled was too fast for Callan's limited toddler speak, but when the boy dumped the bucket, flung himself into Cal's lap like the puppy, Callan understood unfiltered love. He couldn't say how he'd come to deserve it, but it sure as hell brightened a day. Brody wriggled down again to retrieve the bucket, dig in for an action figure.
Run, man!
I can see that. I thought you were a Power Ranger man.
Red Ranger. Hulk. Captain America. Silver Ranger.
Silver, his mother corrected. Silver.
Silver.
He named his collection as he pushed them at Callan. I can't stop Ma from buying them for him.
Why should she stop?
Katie Skinner came down the stairs. She wore a dark gray dress, short, sensible black boots. More, Callan thought. She wore happy. To his mind, that hadn't been a staple of her wardrobe for far too many years. It suited her, that happy. Like the hair she'd let go stone gray, and the laugh she let loose when Brody raced over to hug her legs.
Cal!
He told her.
I can see that. Cal, play!
Go ahead, Katie told Callan. Give him some time. We've got plenty.
I'm going to make Savannah some tea.
Ma, I would really love some, thanks.
She wants sassafras,
Callan said as he slid down to sit on the floor, thrilling both boy and puppy.
I actually do. Two shakes.
Callan chose some men for battle.
You put a light back in her, Vanna. You and Justin and this boy.
I think we got it going again. You lit another when you came back home.
It's amped up a little bit more still at the idea of you and Bodine Longbow. When his head shot up, his eyes narrowed, Savannah hugged her belly and laughed.
You might have been away, Cal, but you shouldn't have forgotten how much overlap there is in people we all know. We heard all about you and Bodine dancing sexy at the roundup this past Saturday night.
Dancing sexy.
Callan held his hands over Brody's ears.
Is that any way to talk around a child?
His daddy and I have been known to do some sexy dancing right in front of him.
I might have to cover my own ears.
Smirking, Savannah ran a hand down one of her braids.
So, about you and Bodine.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
I've always liked her. All of them, but Bodine especially. You don't know how she'd ride over two or three times a year with a bag of clothes for me. She'd say how I was so handy with a needle, maybe I could fix them up and use them.
There wasn't a thing wrong with them. Maybe a button missing or a little tear in a seam. She said that to spare my feelings. And when Justin and I opened the shop, she was one of the first in the door. She has a kind heart and class. I'm not sure you deserve her. She smiled when she said it.
Women, Brody, they are contrary creatures. It's best you learn that now.
Women.
Brody held up Pink Ranger and hooted. An hour with his sister and entertaining nephew, another hour or so taking his mother to dinner, Callan considered them nice bookends. What stacked between them was duty. He stopped as she asked so she could buy flowers, waited patiently as she selected what she wanted, and kept his thoughts about the yellow tulips not lasting the night to himself. He'd have paid for them, but she wouldn't have it. He drove to the cemetery, let her lead the way after he'd parked. He hadn't been since the funeral, hadn't intended to come again. Now he realized he'd make this sojourn with her whenever she asked. He could be grateful they maintained the place, he supposed, cleared most of the snow. What was left made hard-packed paths easy enough for her to walk. He kept a hand on her arm in any case as she navigated through the stones to the small, simple one marked with his father's name. Jack William Skinner, husband and father. True enough, Callan thought. He'd been both. The stone didn't need to take into account the degrees of success on either.
I know it's hard for you to come here, Katie began. I know it's not altogether fair for me to ask you to come.
It's not a matter of fair.
He had weaknesses, she continued, as the wind blew through her hair. He broke promises to you.
To all of us, Callan thought, but kept silent.
He made life harder for you because of those weaknesses and broken promises. He knew that. Oh, Callan, he knew it. And he did try. I could have left, taken you and Savannah and left him.
Why didn't you?
I loved him. And love's a powerful thing.
While the wind blew through her hair, she stroked a hand along the top of the gravestone.
It can take hard knocks, again and again. He loved us. That's why when he gave in to those weaknesses, it hurt him more than it ever hurt me. He'd work hard to make up for it, but then...
Then, Callan thought. He remembered a whole lot of thens. There were times you could barely put food on the table, when the bills piled up like cordwood.
I know it.
I know. Still... She continued to run a gloved hand over the top of the gravestone, as if soothing a mournful ghost.
Just as I know gambling was a sickness for him, one he struggled with. He never blamed anybody but himself, Callan, and that's an important thing to remember. Some do. They cast the blame around for their addictions, liquor or drugs or gambling. Casting blame is cruel, violent. Your father was never cruel, never laid a hand on me or either of our children. He didn't have a mean bone in him.
With a sigh, she stopped stroking the stone, took her son's hand.
But he let you down.
What about you?
God, it infuriated him. She never blamed her husband for the losses, the scrimping, the humiliations.
Oh. Cal, he let me down. And the down was harder, so much harder, when he'd go so long without falling. A part of you blames me for not making him stop.
Used to, he admitted. I used to blame you for that. I know better now. I don't blame you for anything, Ma. That's God's truth.
She stared hard at him, eyes seeking. Then closing.
That lifts a weight. I can't tell you the weight that lifts,
knowing that's the truth. His father, Callan thought, hadn't been the only one to make mistakes, to let people down.
I can be sorry I didn't lift it sooner. I am sorry.
I made mistakes. I made mistakes when I made excuses for him, when I made them to you and Vanna.
She squeezed his hand.
I can be sorry for that, and I am. He'd tell himself he had it licked. He'd know better, but he'd tell himself that. He'd just sit in on a friendly poker game or put a small bet on a horse race, anything really. He knew he'd slide back, but he'd tell himself he wouldn't. He'd stop going to his meetings.
What meetings?
Gamblers Anonymous. He didn't tell you or Savannah about going to them. The truth is, part of him was ashamed for going, for needing to go. He wouldn't tell me when he stopped going, though I'd start seeing signs. The only thing he ever lied to me about in our lives together were those meetings. Skipping them to gamble. I could forgive him for that, because the lies and the gambling were the same. He was proud of you, you and Savannah. Maybe you'll never feel the truth of that. And that's his blame, not yours. Maybe you're not going to remember the good times, and we had them. Or how he put you up on a horse the first time, brought home your first dog, taught you how to hammer a nail and mend a fence. But he did those things, Callan, and had a father's pride in you. And your father never forgave himself for costing you and Savannah your birthright, for gambling away the ranch acre by acre.
It was your home.
I'll tell you a secret.
She laid a hand on his arm, rubbed. The ranch was nothing but work for me, means to an end. I'd have liked a house like Vanna's, neighbors close by, a yard, a little garden, horses and cattle and fields to plow and plant, just endless work. Your daddy loved it. You loved it.
I never did.
But you...
He trailed off, shook his head. Maybe a man could never understand women and the strength that ran through them, or how they could love.
I learned well enough how to be a ranch wife, but the truth is, it was never natural for me. I love living with Savannah and Justin and that baby boy, and I'm useful to them. That's natural to me. I can help make their lives easier, and every day I'm blessed to see how happy they are together, how my girl's made a good life for herself. I've never figured out what to do to make your life easier, to make up for having what was yours gambled away.
You don't need to. I can make my own. I don't need what was.
I know you can. Didn't you send money to me every single month? Don't you still? And there's no need for you to...
I need to, he said, cutting her off.
You can make your own, Callan, and I know you'll build your own happy life, but the land was yours, and I couldn't keep it for you.
I don't want you to carry that, Ma. I don't want to think I've left that weight on you. If it was only the land, I could have bought it back. Or enough of it. I left to make my own, to prove I could, to myself. I came back because I had. And I missed home. Home wasn't that plot of land.
I wanted you to bring me today so I could say these things, and maybe put them aside for us. He never forgave himself for losing what should have been yours. And when he finally accepted he'd never get it back, it was in that despair that he took his own life. I couldn't forgive him for that.
Katie looked back at the stone, at the name carved there.
For all the rest, I'd forgiven him. The day we buried him here, I had no forgiveness in my heart. Anger and blame.
I couldn't feel anything else. Friends and neighbors came. I said the words back to them you're supposed to say. I said words to you and your sister you're supposed to say. But the words I said to him in my private thoughts were